Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I hope you're starting to garner some of the real benefits and some of the insights that the ratification debates provide. We're just only diving into the Massachusetts so far. We've already kind of glossed over because there's nothing to dive into regarding Delaware and Georgia. But Massachusetts has a lot of good meat. The next one coming up, which is North Carolina, has a lot of really juicy red meat. And what I mean by that is one of the things we're covering this time, in addition to jurisdiction, in addition to enumerated powers and those types of things, we're also giving you, if you haven't noticed, we're giving you the insights of what these founders, and when I say founders, if you understand an organization like a corporation, who's the founder of a company or a corporation? Well, that's the individual with the idea that creates the company, or the people that pool together and create a collective idea in creating a company that's going to manufacture products, services, or what have you, whether that be regardless of the industry. A founder is a principal stakeholder of the corporation. It's somebody that is vested and is a stockholder. So when I say founder in regards to our historical government, the founders are the states. And too many times I hear people refer to the founders as people. They're not. People have completely lost and have lost sight of republicanism. The republic and the founders of the great republic, which is the United States, because each state is a republic in itself. Who are the founders of the state? It shouldn't be the people. It was the counties that should have bought into whether the Constitution was going to serve them or not. Because bottom line, if your counties are not being served, then the counties, just like what happened in West Virginia, when Virginia was going down this path and the people of West Virginia or those counties felt that they were being improperly treated, then when you can look at, you know, the course of actions that you haven't, one course of action is to allow them to continually pummel you, or you can break into a different state. Now, I've said this before, I highly, highly advocate every state out there that has a population center that is dragging that state into the abyss, separate yourself. As a matter of fact, Illinois would be very easy to chop Chicago completely out. Let Chicago become its own state. Then it becomes its own problem. Same thing with Indiana. Same thing with the Seattle and Washington, Portland, and so forth. There's probably 15 to 17 states that should be divided. Nevada's being one of those with Las Vegas. If you live in a state that has a population center that is dragging you down, you have two courses of action to reel them back in to the principles of our constitutional republic, which are the two fundamental principles, individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And if they're constantly moving down this path of saying the state has to regulate you, they have to regulate this, then you have two courses of options, or two courses of action. One is to rewrite your constitution, have a constitutional convention, and the way to do that is for your counties. Now, I'm going to tell you something, that there's a good likelihood that they have written it into the Constitution that the people call on the convention to, or, for the Constitution or what have you. That is antithetical and is the exact opposite of the design of American republicanism and the whole reason why we even have counties and or in Louisiana parishes. The whole point is that a republic is a group of smaller states that have created I'll call it a state government, because if you understand the United States, the federal government is the state government for the United States, all the states combined. And your state is the state government for your counties. And so if you understand American republicanism that Roger Sherman created, he created two and recognized, and the framers all bought into this. This was just so brilliant about this, is that sovereignty wasn't just held with the people. You have to acknowledge that when we create government, we delegate to government our sovereignty in this capacity, that capacity, and this capacity. And it's that simple. All we have to do is understand what we want to delegate to them, and then we lock them down in an enumerated constitution. And I believe most all the states' constitutions are very similar as enumerated, but the further away you get from the epoch, the more things start drifting, and that epoch was our constitution. Our constitution was truly an epoch of time of understanding a different and new level of one sovereignty, republicanism, in creating a government with so many different balances and checks and balances, that they gave us a system that was almost impossible to ruin unless we were no longer cognizant of what was going on and engaged in the process. I mean, as long as we stay on top of government, government won't get on top of us. You know, if you surrender and you not stay on top of government, they will. They will figure out a way to get on top of us. Now, as you know, the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is still only the only show that is providing the academic evidence-based solutions necessary to solving our bigger problems. Now, the question I want to ask you, are you a part of the problem? Well, there's only one way that you are not a part of the problem. Most people think, oh, well, I'm helping. Yeah, you may be helping, but you probably might still be a part of the problem. The only way you are no longer a part of the problem is if you are a part of the solution. And I am here to tell you that the solution is Republic Review. It is calling out and auditing and identifying, clearly identifying every violation of the Constitution. And in doing so, this is how we ferret through. This is how we dive and expose the problems that the government has given us and how we have to, dispatch with it, how we have to disposition it into a terminus, or killing it and or migrating it back to the states, whatever. But bottom line, if you're going to be a part of the solution, you have to be a part of the solution. If not, then you are a part of the problem. And I was just talking to somebody this weekend regarding this, that there's a lot of really good people. There's a lot of, really good patriots that their hearts are in the right spot, but they're just not putting, their heads aren't putting them in the right spot of being a part of the solution. You have to get engaged. You have to act. It's that simple. There is a battle cry, help. There is a nation in distress. And it is not about one person solving the problem. It is about everybody stepping up and becoming a part of the solution. That's the only way we're going to fix this. Now, again, we're still in the ratification debate, so we're not going to dive into any of the marketing. So I'm not going to keep you apprised. If you want to know what's going on, go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, and I will give you, as soon as I have a light at the end of the tunnel, we will get into some more marketing so you can kind of address the news du jour. However, I'm here to tell you that that news isn't going anywhere. Just like I've been telling you, shoot, it's almost been, over a year. We're on our, downslide here now that we're in the second year of this congressional cycle. And this impeachment process, because they've been clamoring and dying and calling for impeachments for a long time. As a matter of fact, the day Trump was inaugurated is the day they started saying, well, we got to figure out how to impeach him. Russia, all of these types of things. It's not going anywhere. And that's one of the reasons why we're actually including the discussion of impeachment in the ratification debate, so you can understand how this whole thing was implemented. That the impeachment process is a two-part process. First, you have to have the indictment, which impeachment is the indictment. And then you have to have the trial. The trial is the process where you have due process, where you actually examine the evidence. Now, you gotta acknowledge the fact that the grand jury, comes up with all the evidence and they make a decision to indict or not to indict. Now, in this particular case, they're doing what they want to do. They're not following the logical sequences. But with that, I realize I don't have enough time and I do need to get into the debates. More importantly, I do need to plug Red State Coffee. So once we get through these next promos that are coming up, I will then plug Red State Coffee and then let you know how you can get involved. That way, as far as I'm concerned, we can move forward and, not look back over our shoulders, because I think you only win the race when you're focused on winning the race and not worried about who else is running the race. So we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so Red State Coffee, if you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org website, right there on the homepage, you can find a link to take you to Red State Coffee. This right now is our exclusive sponsor. As a matter of fact, I'd love it if I didn't need a sponsor. But I'm not getting the contributions and those types of things, so I'm trying to figure out how we can help subsidize our cost, because it costs money to be a part of the solution. And it doesn't have to be a lot of money. As a matter of fact, a very humble person such as myself, which we're not opulent, you know, rich people. We're not living a, like I say in some of my promos, a highfalutin lifestyle. We're just humble. We're just a humble family getting by with what we have, and we're happy with what we have to be happy with. The important thing is that we're pushing forward. We're doing and acting upon the knowledge that the good Lord has given us of what we need to do, and we're just asking you to join in. If you want to be a part of the solution, then you have to be a part of the solution. If you're not engaging in helping and supporting the solution, then you're still a part of the problem. And that's the best way to put it. Anyway, I just want to dive into the whole intent. And I apologize on the monologue, but I wanted you to understand the importance. Once again, I try to impress upon you the importance of the ratification base. These are not just insights. These aren't just interesting words. These are legally binding definitions to the Constitution, to, you know, legally binding definitions to what the government can do, the federal government can do, and what it cannot do. So, with that, I will dive into, we were just covering Mr. Nason's comments regarding the militia, the guns, and so forth. And to wrap up what he was saying, because I didn't have time to really finish this last time, the paragraph that gives Congress power to suspend the writ of habeas corpus claims a little attention. This is a great bulwark, a great privilege indeed. We ought not, therefore, to give it up on any slight pretense, not upon, but up on any slight pretense. See, let us see. How long is it to be suspended? As long as the rebellion or invasion shall continue? This is exceedingly loose. Why is it not the time limited, as is our Constitution? But, sir, its design would be defeated if it was the intent and or by it will... Let me start over here. Why is not the time limited as our Constitution? But, sir, its design would then be defeated. It was the intent, and by it we shall give upon our greatest privileges, concluding by saying, or basically he was concluding to say, he had much more to say, but as the House were impatient, he would sit down at the present to give other gentlemen an opportunity to speak. So this was kind of some editorializing. So this is the problem in reading this. As you read this, you're going to notice that they actually have his words, what he's saying, and then they add, oh, well, he was trying to say this, to try to be brief on, instead of writing the long-winded words like yours truly, in trying to get around to what he was trying to say. Bottom line, what he was really talking about here, and as a matter of fact, the only place in the ratification debates that I have found that really defines the limitations on the suspension of habeas corpus deals with the militia, and it is in Virginia, and it was by Madison. As Madison stated, that these types of things, the suspension of habeas corpus, is only during martial law. And martial law is only declared when the militia is engaged in suppressing insurrection or repelling an invasion or executing the laws of the land. Now, they are they are codependent. In other words, you cannot suspend the writ of habeas corpus without having the militia, you know, deployed and engaged in doing what they need to do. Now, I'm here to tell you that this is a completely lost paradigm on everybody, because everybody thought that Abraham Lincoln had the authority and Congress had the constitutional authority to suspend habeas corpus. They did not. They were not calling upon the militia to execute the laws of the land or repelling invasion. What they did was they created a standing army separate from the militia. As I've gone through the past day, 2 days, past two episodes, the militia was the army for the interior and for the states. Therefore, there had to be an engagement within the states for those militias. Now, if you understand the Civil War was across a southern line. And so the militia wasn't being deployed in the states where that southern line was. They may have been deployed, but they were dealing with and engaging the hostilities in the states below. Let's be very clear. The southern states were not invading. They were not insurrecting inside these other states. As a matter of fact, had Lincoln done nothing, the southern states would have got organized, and they may have created, may have gone down this path of creating a DMZ, you know, if the hyperbole and the rhetoric was, you know, bouncing back and forth between the North and the South, they probably would have created a DMZ like North and South Korea. But instead, Lincoln tried to muster up militias, and he failed. And this was the beauty of the militia. This was the brilliant part of being a militia form of enforcement and or protection and security. Because these folks aren't going to want to fight the war for the corporations. These folks are just, you know, they're people that are, they're trying to get by. These are people that have jobs. These are people that have crops and fields. These are not mercenaries that go in and become a part of the U.S. military or some militarized unit or mercenary group because they like to fight. And as a matter of fact, if you know some of the guys in the militia, some of these guys may have done time in the military and just didn't get their fun out of them. And then there's those guys that never were able to go into the military or for some reason didn't go in, but they really, you know, had this, they gravitated towards, you know, guns and playing army and that type of stuff. And I'm not trying to be insulting to anybody. What I'm trying to basically state is that those people that are actively engaged in the militia today, they just have this propensity of enjoying and or wanting and having the responsibility of defending their homeland, their county, their state from bad people. Because they understand the militia is, per the Constitution, still our only constitutional mechanism of protecting ourselves. These people are patriots. They're good people. Fact of the matter is that when Lincoln, like I said, decided to violate this concept of using a militia, he didn't get Congress to try to amend the Constitution with the states that were left. Here they had the full opportunity to be able to do this. Why didn't they amend the Constitution? Just like with the 14th Amendment. The southern states were out. When they emancipated the slaves and they, you know, created the 14th Amendment, they did not wait for those states to come back into the Union. They already passed the 14th Amendment. And they realized that every state that wanted to come back into the Union had to fully ratify the Constitution, but they had this weird spin on it that says you also have to ratify this. Well, the amendment was already constitutionally ratified. I think it was an exercise in futility. It wasn't necessary because too many people get hung up on that little fact. But anyway, here I am. I'm stuck in this long diatribe regarding the militia and the importance, and the whole point of this was this one line of suspending habeas corpus. Fact of the matter is, and we'll get into this when we get into Virginia, Madison clarified this to where there was no more mud, there was no more, you know, cloudiness on this issue. The clarity is this: the only time the federal government can suspend habeas corpus is only in the states where the militia is deployed, and if the militia is being deployed within the state. In other words, it is the people that are rebelling, it is the people that are insurrecting, or it is the people invading. But of course, that doesn't make sense when people don't invade themselves. The invasion would have to be from another country. So the invasion would not necessarily have a requirement for suspending habeas corpus throughout the state. They may have to do it if there is, you know, a lot of, I'll give you a good example. If there are people within the state that are aiding and abetting the invasion and that type of stuff, they may have to suspend habeas corpus to arrest those people, pull them in, and, you know, because they have a job to do. Their job is to secure our freedoms and our liberties from this invading force. And when you got people that are a part of that, that's technically that is treasonous behavior. And so anyway, this one paragraph took me a whole segment. See, that's what happens when you start really diving into these things. So this wasn't very clear, and obviously Mr. Nason had to cut himself short because he realized that he probably wouldn't be able to get to the end, and so he just allowed Judge Sumner, who was the next person up, to basically stand up and start talking. With that, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
All right. Well, let me just kind of plow forward. The next speaker that we're going to cover is Reverend Thatcher, or Mr. Thatcher. And this is kind of interesting. I'm just going to take off where I've got it highlighted. With respect to the first of these considerations, I trust there is no man in his senses but what will own that the whole country hath largely felt the want of energy in the general government. While we were at war with Britain, common danger produced a common union. But the cause being removed, the effect ceased also. Nay, I do not know, but we may safely add that the union produced by a uniform danger was still inadequate to general and national purposes. This Commonwealth, with a generous disinterested regard of the good of the whole, appeared foremost in the day of danger. At the conclusion of the late war, 2/3 of the Continental armies were from Massachusetts. That's interesting. Their provisions and their clothing proceeded also in a great measure from the extraordinary exertions. The people did this in the fullest confidence that when peace and tranquility were restored from the honor and justice of our sister states, our supernumerary expenses would be abundantly repaid. But alas, how much hath our expectations been blasted? The Congress, though willing, yet had no power to do us justice. So in other words, 2/3 of the army at the very end of the Revolutionary War was really coming from New England. And so there was a lot of debt because these men were traveling at their own expenses. If you understand the whole thing, the financing for the war was really done on as a burden by these men that were the patriots, the 3%ers that were literally out there fighting, and the 7% that were getting involved in trying to help and do what they can. There was a lot of people that did nothing, and the federal government did not have the ability to tax, to actually go to the states to shake them down and get the money to help pay for this war. Now, there's always going to be people out there, by the way, always going to be people that say, oh, taxation is theft. We have, no need for government. Those people are a big part of the problem. They don't understand that we have to have some level of government, and that the government we have is, I don't want to say divine, but by design, it is divine, because it is a limited and enumerated government where it only has these powers that are listed in the Constitution. The problem is it is not exercising based upon, it is not executing just those powers. It has usurped many powers. Moving on, Mr. Thatcher continues and says, the Congress, though willing, yet had no power to do us justice. The small district of Rhode Island put a negative upon the collected wisdom of the continent. Excuse me. This was done not by those who are the patrons of the present infamous system of paper currency, but by the part of them who now call themselves honest men. We have made exertions to stop importation of foreign luxuries. Our brethren in the neighboring states, from the view of local advantages, have taken occasion to distress upon the same account. They have encouraged where we have prohibited, and by those iniquitous measures, iniquitous, like sinful measures, that's the best way to say it. Tough to say, though. But anyway, iniquitous measures have made our virtue and public spirit an additional cause of our calamity. Nor have our calamities been local. They have reached to all parts of the United States and have produced dissipation and indigence, like not having the indigent, the people that are, literally poor, have no possessions. That would be the indigence at home, and contempt in foreign countries. On the one hand, the haughty or the proud, boastful Spaniard has deprived us of the navigation of the river Mississippi. On the other, the British nation are, by extravagant duties, ruining our fishery, which is why they wanted to have a bounty to pay the cod fishermen for for not being able to fish, or giving them extra money for the fish they were able to get. Anyway, our sailors are enslaved by the pirates of Algiers. Our credit is reduced to so low an ebb that American faith is a proverbial expression for perfidy, as Punic faith has among the Romans. Thus have we suffered every species of infamy abroad and poverty at home. Such, in fact, have been our calamities, as are enough to convince the most skeptical among us of the want of a general government in which energy and vigor should be established, and at the same time the rights and liberties of the people preserved. A constitution has been presented to us, which, composed and planned by men who in the council and field have in the utmost conspicuous offices served their country in the late war. It comes with an authenticated man who, without any pecuniary reward, commanded our army and who retired to a private station with more pleasure than he left it. I do not say, Mr. President, that this proves the form of government to be perfect or that it is an unanswerable argument that we should adopt it, but it is a reason why we should examine it with care and caution and that we ought not rashly, precipitately to reject it. I will be objected. There are more powers granted than are necessary, and that it takes to destroy the local governments of the particular states, and that it will eventually end either in aristocracy or despotism. Now, he was quoting somebody here. To answer the objection, two considerations should be taken into view. The situation of the continent when a constitution was formed and the impossibility of preserving perfect sovereignty in the states after necessary powers were ceded to a supreme council of the whole. As to the first, let us candidly examine the state of these republics from New Hampshire to Georgia and see how far vigor and energy were required. During the session of the late convention, Massachusetts was on the point of civil war. The Shays Rebellion had just occurred. In Vermont and New Hampshire, a great disaffection to their several governments prevailed among the people. The New York absolutely refused complying with the requisitions of Congress. In Virginia, armed men endeavored to stop the courts of justice. In South Carolina, creditors by law were obliged to receive barren and useless land for contracts made in silver and gold. I pass over the instance of Rhode Island. Their conduct was notorious. In some states, laws were made directly against the Treaty of Peace. In other states, statutes were enacted which clashed directly against any federal union. New land sufficient to discharge a great power of the continental debt intruded upon by needy adventurers, our frontier settlements exposed to the ravages of Indians, while the several states were unable to unwillingly to relieve their distress. Lay all those circumstances together and you will find some apology for those gentlemen who framed this Constitution. I trust you may charitably assign other motives for their conduct than a design to enslave this country and to parcel out for themselves its honors and emoluments. This is such a great insight as to what the heck was going on. The second consideration deserves its weight. Can these local governments be sufficient to protect us from foreign enemies or from disaffection at home? 13 states are formed already. The same number are probably to be formed from the lands not yet cultivated. On the former, yet smaller divisions may be made. The province of Maine hath desired a separation in time of a separation may take place. Who knows? And it took a long time because Maine didn't come into the Union until the Missouri Compromise. Anyway, who knows but what the same may happen with the respect of the old colony of Plymouth. Now conceive the number of states increased, their boundaries lessened, and their interests clashing, how easy a prey to a foreign power, how liable to war among themselves. Let these arguments be weighed, and I dare say, sir, that there is no man but what would conceive that a coercive power over the whole, searching through all the parts of the system, is necessary to preserve the happiness of the whole people. But I readily grant all these reasons are not sufficient to surrender up the essential liberties of the people, but we do surrender them. This Constitution has been compared by its defenders and opponents to the British government. In my view of it, there is a great difference. In Britain, the government is said to consist of three forms, a monarchy, or an aristocracy, and a democracy. But in fact, is but a few removes from the absolute despotism. In The Crown, and we just kind of ran out of time, so I'll just finish the rest of this when we come back. This is a long piece by the Reverend Thatcher, or Mr. Thatcher, but it is so insightful. So we'll be back and finish this up after this break. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back with some more of the Massachusetts Mr. Thatcher's comments regarding the Republic and the government at the time.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so let me get back to what Reverend Thatcher was saying. And he was making some really good analysis, and he was very good at looking at the big picture and presenting the macro view here. And basically, I just get right back to what he was saying. And I'm going to repeat the last sentence to move forward. In my view of it, there is a great difference. In Britain, the government is said to consist of three forms, a monarchy, aristocracy, and democracy, but in fact is but a few removes from the absolute despotism. In the crown is vested the power of aiding at pleasure to the second branch, of nominating to all the places of honor and emolument, right, which is the House of Lords, of the purchasing of immense revenues, the suffrage of the House of Commons, right? That's the democracy side. The voice of the people is but the echo of the king, and their boasted privileges lie entirely at his mercy. In this proposed form, each branch of power is derived either immediately or directly from the people. The lower house are elected directly by the persons who are qualified to vote for the representatives of the state, and at the expiration of 2 years, become private men unless their past conduct entitles them to a future election. The Senate are elected by the legislatures of the different states and representing their sovereignty. So we kind of have a House of Lords and a House of Commons, with the representatives being the 2 years, which is the Commons and the Lord. Instead of being appointed by the king, though, our secondary house, or our higher house, the Senate, was to be selected by the state legislatures to ensure that the interests of the state were being protected, because the states no longer had kings. the states were governed by sovereigns, which was a legislative system. The CEOs, the executives, their responsibility was very clear. They were to execute the laws of the land. They could not legislate. They could not judge. That's why we had a separate judiciary. And that was the brilliance of this system. Moving on, he says, these powers are a check on each other. It can never be made dependent on one another or independent of the people. The president is chosen by electors who are and still supposed to be chosen by electors to this day, but are not, who are appointed by the people. The high courts of justice arise from the president and Senate, but yet the ministers of them can be removed only on bad behavior. The independence of judges is one of the most favorable circumstances to public liberty. Now, a lot of us have a problem with this. But anyway, let's move on. For when they become the slaves of a venial, corrupt court and the hirelings of tyranny, all property is precarious and personal security at an end. A man may be stripped of his possessions and murdered without the forms of law. Thus it appears that all parts of the system are ultimately from the people and are still independent of each other. There are restraints which, though not directly named in this Constitution, yet are evidently discerned by every man of common observation. These are the government of the several states and the spirit of liberty. And so that is the big check that he wanted to mention. The first thing he points out is, you know, that there are checks that aren't visible, but by observation, this is what you'll find. And then he points out that these are the government of the several states. In other words, the state legislatures are the ones that have these big restraints over the federal government. Are we wronged or injured? Are our immediate representatives or those whom we ought to apply? Their power and influence will still be great, but should any servants of the people, however eminent their stations, attempt to enslave them from this spirit of liberty, such opposition would arise as would bring them to the scaffold. But admitting that there are dangers in accepting the general government, yet are there not great hazards in rejecting it, such as, Mr. President, the state of our affairs, that it is not our power to carve for ourselves. To avoid the greatest choice, the least of these two evils, is all that we can do. What then will the probable effects of this Constitution be rejected? Have we not reason to fear commotions in this Commonwealth if they arise? Can we be always certain that we will be furnished with a citizen who, though possessed of extensive influence and greatest abilities, will make no other use of them than to quiet the tumult of the people, to prevent civil war, and to restore the usual course of law and justice? Are we not in danger from the other states when their interests or prejudices are opposite to ours? In such scenes of hostile contention, will not some Celia drench the land in blood, or some Cromwell or Caesar lay our liberties prostrate at his feet? Good history lesson here. Will not foreign nations attack us in our weak, divided condition and once more render us provinces of some potentate of Europe? Or will those powers to whom we are indebted lie quiet? They certainly will not. They are now waiting for our decision, but when they once see that our union is broken and that we are determined to neglect them, they will issue out letters of marque and reprisal and entirely destroy our commerce. In other words, they'll declare war against us. If the system is broken, will 13 or even 9 states ever agree to another? And will Providence smile on a people who despise the privileges put into their hands and who neglect the plainest principles of justice and honesty? After all, I by no means pretend that there is a complete perfection in this proposed Constitution. Like all other human productions, it has faults. Provision is made for the amendment. A provision is made for an amendment. Whatever from practice it is found oppressive, I would add the proposals from His Excellency hath condescended to lay before the honorable convention respecting future alterations are real improvements for the better. And we have no reason to doubt that they will be equally attended to by other states as they lead to common security and preservation. Some of the gentlemen in the opposition have quoted ancient history and applied it to the question now under debate. They have shown us the danger which arises from vesting magistrates too much power. I will say that they have gone to tell the whole truth. They might have shown how nearly licentiousness and tyranny are allied, and that they will not be governed by reason, must submit force. That demagogues in all free governments have a first hand, have first held out an idea extreme liberty and have seized on the rights of the people under the mask of patriotism. And that's what we have going on right now, is there's lots of people that are questioning real patriotism and saying you have to support the government, not the Constitution. That's why I go through this so much, my friends. They might have shown us a republic in which wisdom, virtue, and order were qualities for which a man was liable to banishment. On the other hand, boasting sedition and falsehood, the sure road to honor and promotion. I am sorry that it hath been hinted by some gentlemen in this house as if it were a combination of the rich and learned and those of liberal professions to establish and support an arbitrary form of government. Far be it from me to retort so uncharitable and unchristian a suggestion. I doubt but the gentlemen who are different sentiments from myself are actuated by the purest motives. Some of them I have pleasure to be particularly acquainted with and can safely pronounce them to be men of virtue and honor. They have no doubt a laudable concern for the liberties of their country, and I would beg them to remember that the extreme jealousy and suspicion must be as fatal to freedom as security and negligence. With respect to myself, I am conscious of no motive which guides me in this great solemn question. But if you could justify my own heart, both on the bed of death and before the tribunal of impotence, I am a poor man. I have the feelings of a poor man. If these are honors and emoluments in this proposed constitution, I shall, by my profession and circumstances in life, be forever excluded from them. It is my wish and prayer that in the solemn verdict we are very soon to pronounce, we may be directed to the measure which will be for the glory, freedom, and felicity of my country. Very powerful words and a very passionate speech. But he really lays, like I said, he really lays out a lot of history and just basically says, you know, this government has more checks and balances in it and has been so designed that it is almost impervious to corruption and these problems, other than the fact that we, you know, we are supposed to stay on top of government. The process is not we the people on top of government, we the people on top of our state government, and our state government on top of the federal government. That was the process that we were supposed to maintain to control that federal government. But as we became lackadaisical, as we got off of our local government and started moving to the federal government, they became the suppliers of everything, and their lucre has corrupted us. We have to start uniting, pulling together. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And we'll be finishing up, hopefully, the Massachusetts debates in our next episode. Thank you so much. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am
trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.